Now, the Bram Weinstein Show on Washington's new home for sports. ESPN 630.
Hey, babies. Hi, everyone. Bram Weinstein Show on ESPN 630, presented by Flight by Yuengling. Raise the bar at the next generation of light beer. All right, here we go now. Hello, Football Friday.
Yes.
We got some football, not including our team here, but that's all right. Got good games this weekend. Good ones. In fact, only one. I'll open by saying there's only one that I feel actually confident I think I know the outcome in. The other three are all toss-ups to me. I think the Packers are going to beat San Francisco, and I think they'll do so with, I don't know, ease is the wrong way to put it. I don't think they're going to blow them out or anything, but I'm not expecting that game to come down to the wire. I think the Packers will handle them. For a lot of reasons that I'll get into later, but that's the only one that I feel comfortable with. The other ones, Tampa Rams and Chiefs Bills, for sure. You could sell me either way that that's going to go either way. And with Cincinnati Tennessee, I really just don't know what the ceiling is on the Bengals. And I don't know how much Derrick Henry's going to play. And I don't know how high end, which is always the argument about the Titans, how high end are they really? So all three of those other games, for various reasons, I think Tampa, the Rams, Chiefs, and the Bills, any of those four teams could win the Super Bowl. So like that's why they could go either way. The other one, I don't expect either one of them to be in the Super Bowl, which is part of the reason why I don't know how that game's going to play out.
Right.
You know, so that's it.
Yeah, I am with you. This weekend's going to be fun, and the matchups are just great, like on both sides of the ball on all four. I know I'm with you, like Packers probably going to win, but
yeah,
I just love watching Shanahan go to work, too. Like, that guy goes crazy when the moment matters, and it's going to be closer than we probably think, just like last week was with them, but I'm with you. All four games are going to be fun to watch.
I mean, I assume that San Francisco is going to try to run the ball with all their intricate run plays, and if they have some success, they'll run some clock, and, you know, the game will remain relatively close. I just don't trust Garoppolo to make the big plays, and I do trust Rodgers to make the big plays, and I think that's probably the difference here, and frankly, Green Bay can run it as good as anybody, too, so I don't know. I just got a funny feeling that I know what the outcome of that game is. I think, you know, I appreciate what San Francisco did a week ago. This actually, they did a favor for Green Bay by not allowing Dallas to move on, because Dallas has the explosive propensity to beat anybody on any given day, and San Francisco, frankly, doesn't. So I think, you know, I think this is semi a gift, and it's going to be whatever, -8 or whatever it is up there when they play that game. So I trust Rodgers and them to get that done. The other three we'll talk about later. I don't know. Got me on all. I'll give you an opinion, but I'm not going to sit there. I wouldn't put my money on it. For sure. Like, I think this is a good football watching weekend, especially for those other three games. And I think you're a crazy person if you want to bet on Bengals Titans. If you think you know what's going to happen there, I'd love to hear how you think any of it's going to play out, because I don't think we know really enough about either one of them to know what's going to happen when those two play each other. So I don't know. They'd say it was like the Bengals with the Raiders last week. It's like, first go for the Bengals with this group. What are they going to be like in the playoffs? I don't know. Raiders, you know, like, they're a wild card of all wild cards. Like, you just don't know. You don't know what you're going to get.
Right.
And I kind of feel, even though the Titans are the one seed, I still kind of don't know what I'm going to get in the playoffs with them, even though they've been there a number of times. Are they going to lean on Henry a ton? Are they going to try to throw the ball a little bit? Like, I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do. So I have a hard time trying to figure out how that one's going to play out.
It's funny because it's got that classic matchup of they have the best running back in the game, and I would assume they're going to go full bore on Henry. He's got a steel plate in his foot now. Like, I'm going to assume he's good to go. But it's that classic matchup of, like, I could see the Titans having that nice 8-minute take-your-time drive. And then Joe Burrow and Chase link up, and it's two plays, 85 yards, took up 50 seconds of the clock. So that game is going to be awesome, just in terms of, like, no pun intended. The Titans of their offense on either side is going to be fun to watch on that one. They both just operate completely different. They also operate completely different on the coaching side of things, too. Vrabel is one of the best, and I don't trust the Bengals coaching staff at all, even though they won a playoff game last week.
I agree. All right. We got some hirings that are happening around the league now today. Jay Gruden had a second interview with Carolina, but ultimately didn't get the offensive coordinator job. That ended up going to the former Giants coach, Ben McAdoo, which I don't know nationally what the response would have been, but if there was one person that was going to be criticized more for being hired than Jay Gruden in that position, it's Ben McAdoo. So congratulations, Carolina, for picking someone that, whether he's the right guy for the job or not, is going to be roundly criticized as a mistake. And so, I don't know, maybe Jay Gruden caught a break on that one by not getting that. Because I don't know what in the world, like, you don't know who their quarterback is. You know, that's the weirdest part of the whole thing. Like, I think we all know they're going to go hot and heavy to try to get Deshaun or somebody else. And so hiring the offensive coordinator right now, I don't know. Does Deshaun like Ben McAdoo? Because I'm going to go with he doesn't. So that feels like actually a misplaced, misguided, out of time hire here. If you're going to make a run at Russell Wilson or a run at Deshaun Watson, I think they made a mistake today, or they know that those guys aren't coming there, and they just got to get a professional football coach in there, which McAdoo is. So this actually, I looked at it kind of like, because I'm waiting for that owner to make a crazy move to try to get one of these guys, because I know he's hot and heavy to do it and that he is willing to spend whatever it takes. I believe the rumors that he would have traded McCaffrey to get Deshaun Watson. Like, I believe it. I believe he's willing to
do. Should have done it looking back.
Yeah, I know. But like, but that means he's willing to do anything. If that's the case, fine. But the fact that he made this hire today signals one of two things. Those guys aren't going there. And he wanted to get somebody off the market who's a professional football coach, or he seems to think that would be attractive to them, and that's a mistake. So they kind of continue to make the types of mistakes that's going to keep them grounded until they figure out how to run their organization properly, in my opinion. And they're the ones that don't seem to be doing things in any kind of rational order. And they've done it again today. They hired a guy who is going to be roundly criticized and made fun of, right, to be the new offensive coordinator for the coach who they publicly said they were embarrassed they gave the contract to. And then at the same time, they're like, hey, we're willing to do anything to get Deshaun Watson. And Watson's got to be looking at this going, clown show. Like, I'm not going there. Like, you can say what you ever want about me, but I don't need to go there. And all along, I'm like, that's the perfect fit for that guy. Like, he can go down there. Brady's going to retire. Saints are kind of messed up. Atlanta's trying to transition. He played at Clemson. You know, they're going to love him down there. And they keep doing things just way, way, way out of order. So I still kind of firmly believe they kind of don't know what they're doing organizationally. That's all. Just another sign of it.
I mean, it sounds right, because they also had they go from the hottest prospect of Joe Brady to a guy like,
right. And like, who blames Joe Brady for Sam Darnold not being good there?
That's right.
He wasn't good with the Jets.
Yeah.
You know, or like Teddy Bridgewater, who hasn't had a lot of success with really anybody.
That's right. Like, yeah, totally.
Like, Teddy Bridgewater's been an average quarterback for four different teams. Like, if you expected him to explode and become Pat Mahomes, you were misguided the whole time.
That's right.
Like, going,
that's right.
So anyway, whatever. Matt Rhule, you know, if I'm him, I don't know. I kind of want to be fired at this point. I don't even know. Like, I mean, at this point, you know, I mean, at this point, you're like, who am I hiring? Okay. You know, like, is that what it is now?
Right.
Like, I thought you were firing me 2 weeks ago, and they didn't want to do it because he didn't want to look crazy. That's why the owner didn't do it. He didn't want to fire because he didn't want to look crazy.
It screams to me the owner is, of course, still learning on the fly how to be an owner. And it was like, well, I don't want to hire someone up and coming because they're just going to leave for a head coaching gig. That's what the logic seems to be in this one. Like, give me the guy who wants to stay here and will take and, you know, won't go anywhere. And he's like, McAdoo. Yeah, I like that guy. It's like, oh God.
Right.
All right. No, fine.
Like, and if things go wrong next year, nobody's gonna be calling for him to take over as the head coach.
That's right.
It's a hell of a safe hire by Rhule. He's like, they ain't gonna replace me with him. I mean, that is for sure.
That's right.
Like, if they do that, these people down here freak out on him. So that's not gonna happen.
Right.
All right. The other one that occurred today is the Giants do have a GM. This clearly looks like the right person to pick, somebody out of the Bills front office, because they've done an incredible job here over the last 5 years, not just with, you know, securing Josh Allen and you know, developing him into the quarterback that he is, but that's a really, really, really good roster. And, you know, Sean McDermott was a semi-hot name. He wasn't the hottest name when he worked under Rivera in Carolina, and he's turned out to be a terrific head coach for them. You know, so they know what they're doing up there. They got it going. They know what they're doing. And then this guy takes this job, and automatically they're linking the offensive coordinator, Daboll, there, right? So what does that mean if he takes that job and becomes the head coach under that new front office? Does that mean they are going to try to turn Daniel Jones into Josh Allen? Or are they going a completely different direction? So that is the beautiful mystery of the Giants now. And I will say this, like, without knowing much about this assistant GM who they just hired, that feels like an organization that I know they've been a mess for a number of years now. That actually feels like a good hire that they made today. Like, that actually feel like, unlike the Carolina one, that feels like, okay, you're taking a shot on the right guy today to run the organization.
The problem is the cynicism is kicking in for Giants fans, because every hire they look has looked solid and has backfired.
Well, the only people liked Gettleman that much. When they brought him in, there was a lot of skepticism on Gettleman. There was because
I guess I'm going more for coaching. So I do remember the backlash on Gettleman.
Well, the McAdoo one, no one liked either. Nobody
liked internal,
that up
there
either.
So at the very least,
he was internal.
At least you had that
yes.
argument of like, hey, he's under Coughlin. Like, you know, maybe everything kind of works out in itself. And it didn't. And then everyone loved the Joe Judge hire. We liked the Joe Judge hire.
Yeah, yeah,
so,
yeah.
I mean, like...
Well, nobody liked the Shermer one. Yeah, everyone thought Shermer that was a bad idea. Ever, that one
yeah,
blew up on him.
Dead, yeah.
And then everyone was like, they got it right with Joe Judge. Who knew he was so crazy? Like, you know,
right.
And I think that's hard to know that someone's that crazy until they're put to the test, and then you find out they're that crazy.
That's the New York media throwing you in the pressure cooker and like, let's see how you operate now. And like, he did not operate fine
that, you know,
under that.
That's an interesting point. If he was the coach in Jacksonville, would this have happened to him?
I don't think so.
I don't know. I mean, Urban Meyer had his own, but Urban Meyer came in with the crazy expectations, and when it fell apart, everyone's looking at him. If Joe Judge went from there to Jacksonville, from New England to Jacksonville, on the, you know, the pat on the back by Belichick and Saban, even if he was a little crazy with the media, I'm not sure it would have gotten out the way it got out, because the New York media is like, oh my God, what's wrong with you, dude?
Right. Right. And instead of like he would have had the right approach to training camp, then you have Urban Meyer, who, you know, brought in Tim Tebow. Remember when that happened over the summer? Like, he went the complete opposite way. Instead of just kind of skirting along and trying to build something, he went for the flash and tried to, like, you know, bring attention to himself. I think Joe Judge would have gone the complete opposite way, and he would have been there for at least 3 years, just because that's how Jacksonville's, you know, operation and feeling is.
This goes back to, and I think, like, more and more and more, the more I'm around it, the more it becomes evident. Where you go matters. Where the fit, it matters. Like, your personality has to match the personality of the place that you're in to actually have success. And Joe Judge, I'm sure, is a great personality for New York if they're winning, and the worst one on earth when they're losing.
Right. Right. No, exactly.
He's incapable of holding it together when it's not going his way. Like, that guy walked in there and basically thought he's Belichick. He's in a stable franchise. It's all going to be fine. And then when it went completely to you know what, he didn't know how to handle it whatsoever. He became a child. He was incapable of doing any of it. And then he exposed himself as he's not a leader and he's not someone who's going to keep it together. And I think they had no choice but to fire him. And so now what they brought in, I mean, this guy they brought in, I mean, you know, you never know with any of it, but it does feel like the right hire to run the team. That's what it does.
Yeah,
and now, and I'm reading everything beyond this is, of course, they're linking him to the offensive coordinator with the Bills. And that will be very, very interesting, because if he takes that job, it would be, you know, he's one of those that, like, you know, they've been saying, not unlike Bieniemy, has been kind of owed a job for a while here. This is an easy move for him to go down to New York because he knows the guy in the front office. And if he does, he's been a quarterback whisperer and he's largely credited for, you know, developing Josh Allen. The most interesting thing is, if they do that, does that mean they think they're doing it with Daniel Jones, or does that mean they're getting somebody else? And I think that's what's going to be intriguing if they do that. And I actually think, if I'm Daniel Jones, I might see the light at the end of the forest on that one and hope that they're willing to be committed to me, because they turned Josh Allen into a top three quarterback in the NFL.
It's true.
And he came out and he looked like that was impossible that was going to happen. So we'll see. And
similar
skills,
too.
It doesn't mean
they're
going to hire this guy, but it seems like that's the way the ball is probably rolling.
They
got
similar skill sets, too. Jones, not as big as Allen, but, you know, has the athleticism. We've seen him run like crazy at times, like Allen can do at times. And I'm going to with you.
Very, very athletic, dude.
Right. And that's
why he's actually probably faster than Josh Allen.
I would agree. Like, yeah, I'd agree with that. Fast. Yeah, because not as big. I would definitely
not
agree
as
with that.
Big.
But
and definitely, like, I mean, like, Allen also is clutch in the red zone, and this guy hasn't been. Yeah, I mean, that's right. The other big problem.
It's a bit of a problem.
He's a turnover machine. Allen isn't, you know, or was in his first year, but then stopped being that. I don't know if Daboll can. That's the thing. If he stop him from being a turnover machine, I actually think that's the weirdest part about Jones. It's like when you watch him, you know he's not a bust. You know right. that he's talented. You know he can do it at this level, but he fails miserably in these key situations consistently. That if someone could click the light switch on him and get him to stop doing stuff like that, they'd be fine with him. But I don't know. But that's the risk you have to take. And I don't know if that's the risk worth taking for them.
So, I'm actually misspoken because I wanted to double check my work here. They're both the same height and around the same weight. Jones is about 7 pounds, is listed 7 pounds lighter than
Allen.
Than
looks
Allen.
More formidable. Yeah, but yeah, yeah. No, Jones is a big dude. Yeah, like, he's a really big dude.
I think it's just because you see Allen run a lot and you just see him dominate more. So probably in your head, it's like that guy's definitely bigger, but same build pretty much there. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I'd be afraid, you know, being a Tim Fran of this franchise. That if that guy turns it around, oh boy, like he's there for 10 more years. I don't know if I see that, but we'll see.
The difference right now is you trust Allen to make the crazy plays on the move if he has to. You don't trust Jones to make the crazy plays. But you could,
in fact, go full Wentz the other way. That's
yes,
the problem.
Yeah. I mean, but what you can do with him, not unlike Allen, is you could script out run plays for him and it works. It works for both of them. You script, and it really works for him. What he's incredible at, and Washington's been burned by this a million times, that zone read stuff, he's actually unbelievably good at it. Like, really, really good at those fakes and getting out to the outside. And once he's there, he's fast. Like, he's legitimately fast. So you've got a problem with him on the edge. Anyway, so that's that one. All right, I want to get to one other thing that's going on. Oh, the one other thing on the Giants is, like, you know, there's a link now, too, that you know, Brian Flores could go there. And so now all of a sudden everyone's screaming and yelling that means Deshaun.
Right.
So that's a nightmare.
Yeah.
So for everyone who's so everyone around here who's going, I will never bring that guy in. He could play for the Eagles or the Giants. You know that, right?
Right.
Like, you know that. And they're going to also have to do the PR thing with him. But then in September, in a real game, he's going to be playing for them. That's going to be a problem. Okay? That's going to be a problem, especially if we don't get a quarterback of that caliber. And now we have him and Dak in our division. Good luck with that. Like, good luck with that. So just for the people who don't want to hear it and don't want to think about it and think it'd be the worst PR thing they could possibly do, just keep in mind that if Brian Flores is hired by this ex-Bills GM, Deshaun Watson might become a Giant. Okay?
Right.
Just think about that for a second. Mm-hmm. That sucks. That sucks.
Yeah, understatement. Anyway. Understatement, if that were to happen.
Okay.
Yes.
One other thing I want to get to here, which I think is everybody here locally is just all over Schefter for he's tweeting out who originally put out the... This has happened now a couple times. The same staff, LaFleur, Kyle, and Sean McVay were all on the same staff. Uh-huh. At one point, that was under Mike Shanahan.
Right.
Right?
Exactly.
And then McVay got an elevated position on Jay's staff.
Correct. Yes. He got all the way up to what? Offensive coordinator, right?
He did.
Yeah, exactly.
He did. Yes. Okay. So everyone keeps showing this, and of course, it's easy to mock, you know, Washington to be like, three of the head coaches who are coaching right now, and this has happened numerous times over the last couple of years, you could have had any of them. Ha, 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 ha.
Right.
And Schefter, of course, tweets this out and shows it again. And everybody here is like, hey, man, we know you guys like making fun of us, but could you at least do this in context? Like, as if Matt LaFleur or Sean McVay would ever have been the head coach of any team in 2012. Like, it was not, they were in their 20s.
Correct.
That was not happening at the time. Nobody was talking about them being a head coach. No one was like, Shanahan's got two diamonds in the rough. They're two Uber whiz kids on his staff.
Exactly.
They were never saying that. And then secondarily, like, Kyle's his kid.
Yes.
That would be like blaming, you know, the Patriots for not hiring Belichick's kid if he ends up getting a head coach job somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So I would just like to reiterate in defense of the shield here in Washington, that's a ridiculous tweet. It has no context to it whatsoever. It's just there to make us look bad. And if you put any context to it whatsoever, you'd see that while they've had great careers and it's awesome, They were never at that point in time ever any of them going to be hired as a head coach by anybody.
What irks me actually the most about all of it, though, is, okay, I get it. I follow some of those meme accounts on Instagram and Twitter, whatever. You're so above that, man. You're the NFL reporter. It's you and Rappaport. You are so above posting and piling on when stupid meme images get put out like that, and then you pile on with it too. And it's like, dude, we all know you're boys with Mike Shanahan, so are you just trying to make him look good? I don't get your end game here, and I'm with you. Context matters. Kyle left when Mike got fired. McVay got elevated. LaFleur stuck around, also got elevated. They hired Jay Gruden because he was a coordinator that got elevated. Like, it irked me more that the context was like, just totally lost. And then, oh, by the way, where did all of those guys go to? LaFleur went to Green Bay. McVay went to L.A. And then Shanahan went to San Fran. What did all three franchises do or already have? A quarterback! Like, it blows my mind that Schefter went there. That's all. Like,
again, like, this, okay, in context, one of them is his son.
Right.
Who wasn't about to be hired by anybody, right, and in fact was a coordinator on multiple other teams.
Cleveland after that. Cleveland. Not Atlanta. And Cleveland, yeah.
And the way Kyle will tell that story, he will say that his name and his family's name was so utterly tarnished by being here, that's what he had to do to get his good name back. And fine, you can tell that story all you want. If that's what you want to say, fine. You're entitled to that opinion of it. But in context, in 2012, 2013, nobody was talking about you as a head coach. Nobody. And I would assume nobody gave you an interview for it. So whether it went really well, like it did in RG3's first year, and I think largely we credited Mike and Kyle for figuring an offense out that 100%. Worked with this. And in hindsight, it was clear they really figured out. Like, to credit him, I like Kyle. I've said this a million times. I like Kyle. He's a very good coach, very inventive. I love watching the 49ers play. Like, I think they're very, very, very inventive with the way they go about it. Their run game is as creative as anybody I see in football, right? But at the time, he wasn't being hired here. Matt LaFleur, nobody knew who he was. To pretend, and then when the Packers hired him 3 years ago, so that's 5-6 years later, when they did that, everybody said, who? Like, people that's were like, right. What are you talking that's about?
Right. Yes. Yeah.
Everybody was like, what are you talking about? You hired him. It's turned out he's had a terrific run with them. You know, so like, they're right. They were able to see the talent in him, but nobody else was pining to get him. The only one that's a miss, and I was yelling this at the time, and I've said it a million times, I would have fired Jay and elevated Sean McVay, but I got to see him work at that high level. I got to see how he went about it. And I'm like, you know what? This guy's got it. Like, I could tell. And I think my line was, we're letting Bill Walsh walk out the building. I could tell. Like, I know it. He's got it. He's got everything about it. I know it. And he ended up going there, and he has said publicly he wouldn't have taken the job anyway because he wasn't going to do it, and they couldn't keep him. And, you know, so you could say that. But again, that the picture he's showing on this tweet is from 3 to 4 years earlier.
That's right. Yes, exactly.
When he was in his 20s. Like, come on, man. Like, come on. Like, I'm all right with, pull your knives out. We're used to it. It's fine. But, like, make fun of us for the Eagles fans falling or the pipes breaking or, you know, the mistakes that have been made that are, like, verifiably true. No mistake was made with any of those three because nobody knew what they knew. Nobody right. knew that. Right. So, like, come on, man. Like, come on.
One thing to add, just because you mentioned it, by the way, too, and I saw a lot of, not a lot, but a good amount of Washington fans that, you know, don't buy into the cycle of negativity. Did y'all see SoFi had a sewage pipe break the other day on the Monday night game? Where was that energy for the billion-dollar stadium 2 years into its tenure? So, yeah, it's typical for this franchise that everyone wants to pile on.
But, everybody loves piling on. Yeah, everybody loves piling on. And, like, that was one where I was like, come on, Schefter, you know better than that. Yeah. Like, come on. Yep. That's just lazy. Like, we should have known the 25-year-old quality control coach who no one had ever heard of was going to have the greatest first three-year record in the history of the NFL. Like, come on. Like, come on.
And as I said,
give us a little bit of a break here.
The most important stat of all of those is that all three of them have a version of a franchise quarterback, or they have had one the whole entire time. I'll give McVay his credit with Goff. I'll give him the credit with Goff.
Like, oh, yeah.
100%. But LaFleur walked into Aaron freaking Rodgers,
right,
and the other guy got Garoppolo for a second-round pick. Like,
that's right.
Please, please.
That's right.
Life has been easy for two out of three of them, and then McVay got his franchise guy this year. So please, I don't want to hear
it. Right, I know. Everybody, settle down. I know. Settle down, everybody. Settle down. All right, I'll take a quick break. Speaking of Rodgers, he did a very long interview with ESPN, and I want to read you some of the quotes as he tries to put in context the number of the things that have happened this year, and it's pretty good. We'll do that next. Brady, watch the show, ESPN 630, Sports Capital. Some pro football talk. The Texans, who really want to hire Josh McCown as the team's next head coach, hope another team with a vacancy will interview him in order to help legitimize the move that they would like to make.
Oh, God. It never ceases to amaze me how they operate down there.
There are places where things are going bad as well. And if you need, misery does love company. And that one isn't happening here right now, which is great. We don't have a pastor running the front office, telling an owner, and apparently telling the GM who was in New England for 18 years that they should hire a coach who has no experience whatsoever. Granted, played for a long time in the NFL, but no experience whatsoever. okay, yeah, whatever. You guys do you.
It's a lot to unpack, seems like, every time there's a move made with them.
It is.
It can never
go ahead, guys.
Like, what I also don't understand about that one is if he's your guy, he's your guy. Just hire him. Like,
right.
If it works, like, if you're so confident, just do it. Like, and it works. Yeah. You're going to look like the genius. What do you need? You need perception when it comes to that? That's a mess. That's a mess.
Yeah, it is a mess. You know, and then, you know, they'll get hit up because they, you know, it's a inexperienced white guy who they hire.
Right.
I mean, everybody get very upset that, you know, well, why can't you hire an inexperienced black guy, or how about an experienced black guy?
Right.
And they can't really answer that question, but they can say, you know, we just did hire a black guy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, right. Like, you know, I don't know if that counts to you or not. I mean, granted, you don't like that we fired him, but, I hear you on that. Anyway. So this Aaron Rodgers interview is outstanding. I wish I could see it and not just read it, because I really want to see him say all this stuff. But it's by Kevin Van Valkenburg, who's been on this show a couple times. And he said it starts off with an anecdote about one of his appearances on Pat McAfee that kind of sums up the entire year for him, which is he's become a lightning rod. And sometimes, not all... sometimes in unintentional ways, not all the time in unintentional ways, but sometimes, and in this particular case, it was. Rodgers, during an interview, actually was during the Manning cast. During the Manning cast, when he went on there, you know, he does all these interviews from home, and there's a bookshelf in the background, and I guess they asked him about books that he's reading, and he picked up an Ayn Rand book, and... showed it. Okay. And for those who know, you know, she's got some interesting thoughts on a lot of things. And, you know, so it's, you know, she is, you know, a lightning rod herself, you know, for what she's written in the past. Anyway. So he picked this up and he showed it to them. And what he described to Kevin was basically, he goes, this whole thing was predictable. What would happen after if he just said, I'm reading this? And he said this, I was laughing about it before, he said. I was moving some books over and replacing some things behind me. And I was like, oh, dude, I could never read this book. It's however many pages. That's how stupid this is. I'm reading some mentions on Twitter stuff. And these people are loving me up. They're like, oh, yeah, libertarian, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, what the F? And then the people on the other side canceled me. That's kind of trashy. He's reading Ayn Rand. And I'm like, I haven't read it. And even if I did, who gives a you know what? It's a book. I can read something and not immediately have it overtake my personal ideology. And that's the problem with society. Everything is triggering and offensive. It's wild.
I kind of agree with them on that.
Now, I agree with them on that part. But then you'll hear some of the other things where you'll go.
But that's the biggest thing in Rodgers these days. Oh, I kind of agree with that. But what's next? What's next?
What is next? Yeah. Right. What is next? So Kevin said he wrote to the Packers and said, I'd like to talk to Rodgers about his whole year, basically. And he wrote that he expected that he would get either no response or that he'd say no. And he was surprised when he said yes. And Rodgers said why he said yes was because it seemed like you're thinking about writing a hit piece. So I just wanted to make sure you got questions answered from me before you went and had and did that. To which I would say back to Aaron Rodgers, why did you assume he'd write a hit piece about you?
Right, right. You're assuming the worst.
You're assuming the worst, right?
Which
you're
the worst. I guess, you know, probably not the worst way to, you know, take things if you're Rodgers. But,
he's self-aware enough to know that he's done enough things that have caused enough of a stir on a number of different fronts that he realizes people are going to take interest in the whole story, and who knows how that narrative's going to play out. And he's right about that part. I mean, he is. He's completely, completely right about that part. This is what he said in general about, like, all the stuff that started early in the year. Like, and I was making fun of him, too, frankly. I'm like, where's he going? To his yurt? And he had the man bun going. And then he said, that's a Halloween costume. And he looked like he was wearing robes. He looked disheveled. He didn't look like he was, you know, he didn't classically look like a guy ready to play football. He looked like he had spent the offseason doing a little self-reflection with some ayahuasca. And it was hard to know where this guy was, right? So none of us knew where he was, just by appearances. And to his point, that's not fair. But to our point, considering all the things he had said, done, you know, like, there was a general question of, do you really care about playing anymore? Do you really want, like, what was this whole thing about if you're not really into football anymore? Or, like, whatever. So he said this: I think for so long in my life, I was very private about everything. I didn't like really a whole lot of anything out there. And I still do enjoy a separation of private life and professional life. But there were far too many people who were trying to write the narrative of my life and writing things or speaking for me that perpetuated this idea about who I was or what I felt or what the truth that was patently false. So it wasn't so much about caring what people said about me. It was wanting to halt narratives about me that are just at their core not true. Okay. You'll hear some other quotes in a minute, though, that fall in line with the narratives that were being said about him.
Okay, yeah.
Right?
Shocker.
Yeah, shocker, right. He talked about, okay, so now he gets to the part about, I've been immunized, which was perceived as, at best, a interesting use of a word to get around saying you're not vaccinated.
That's right.
To, you know, at worst, a lie. But it's semantics, and no one asked him specifically, are you vaccinated? And it wouldn't have been a lie unless he had lied about that answer. Everyone assumed when he said immunized, that's what he meant. And this is what he said. He was not trying to be misleading. He said what he said was, in fact, purposeful and specific. Saying this, he explained it this way: I had a plan going in for that question to be asked. It was a pseudo witch hunt going on. Who was vaccinated? Who wasn't vaccinated? I was in a multi-month conversation that turned into an appeal process with the NFL at that time, and my appeal hinged on the exact statement, immunized. So what I said was, number one, factually true. I went through a multi-immunization process, and at the end of that, I don't know what you would call it. I would call it immunized. He's refusing, right? He's refusing to acknowledge that was, at bare minimum, misleading.
Yeah, so he's saying he's not wrong when he's saying that.
He's saying, I didn't lie to you.
That's right.
You may not like what I said, but it is the proper, in my world, terminology. And according to the NFL, that's the terminology I needed to use to discuss this if I was not going to say I'm not vaccinated and the reason why I'm not going to be vaccinated.
Didn't have Aaron Rodgers trying to say he had a gotcha moment on my bingo card, but here we are. I mean,
that's what he's going with.
Yes.
At this point, then they go through some of the other stuff that's actually fun, like when he yelled at the Bears fans, "I own you," and he said in a good way, I black out on the field sometimes because I don't even remember saying this, but I do remember looking up and seeing a woman giving me the double bird, and I don't remember what came out of my mouth, but that is what came out of my mouth. And I actually thought that was funny and honest and all of that stuff. And I thought that was really funny. He explained why he likes to go on McAfee, which is, he says, he basically just likes talking to them and that, you know, football, non-football, whatever. Then he got into the Molly Knight thing. The Wall Street Journal shared a report that said he had COVID, remember?
Right.
And he had COVID toe, right? Because he had said in a press conference, he had a toe. He said outside, because he had COVID, and they said outside of a toe injury, I'm fine. Remember, he said that on McAfee. So they looked into it. Yeah, yeah. And this COVID toe thing at the time was happening to a lot of people where they were getting like these. It was one of the weird side effects. If you got the virus, you'd get this weird lesions on your foot. And then, of course, he famously, during a Zoom with reporters, took his feet out and put them up so they could see that he didn't have this. And then he blasted anybody who basically said this, and he screamed disinformation, misinformation, all of this stuff. And Molly Knight, who's written for The Athletic and ESPN, and now, you know, she's a famous reporter, opened up her phone, saw the COVID toe stuff, and retweeted it. He, of course, went on and said, he blasted her by name, okay? Blasted her by name, even though she retweeted someone else's reporting. And this is what he said. This is what she said about it afterwards. She said that the walls were closing in on her, that she got all sorts of crazy, you know, Twitter attacks from anti-vaxxers, Packers fans, all sort of people, because they assumed that she did the reporting and they kind of went after her online. And she described this as something that was terrifying and affected her mental health and all of that stuff. So Kevin asked Rodgers about this incident and said, you know, given time to reflect on it, and being that she didn't write the report, she had only retweeted it, what do you, would you want to say to her? And this was his response. And I don't know if I agree or disagree with him. He said, in retrospect, I should have read it first and maybe it would have been different. I wouldn't maybe have mentioned her by name. But she was piling on. It was a perfect storm for her to jump on this anti-vaxxer flat earther who ended up getting COVID toe, and he's got lesions on the bottom of his feet. So she chose her platform to run with an absolutely ridiculous story, which is essentially, I'm not sorry for calling you out.
I think it's, I can look at this one just a little bit separately. I think he's saying the right thing here because it was reactionary, because what she did was reactionary too.
Correct.
And so, like, once again, you know, I don't want to, like, I'm not patting him on the back or anything. I give him credit for saying I probably would have still done it again because that's how things were piling on. And so I give him a little ounce of respect for at least saying that, that it was in the moment and he probably would have done it again in the moment when it comes to that.
Okay. Here we go.
Here we go.
Now we get to the big quotes where, okay, he's explained himself. Now he got the opportunity to explain why, if you remember, he went on McAfee's show once with a shirt that said cancel culture.
That's
on,
right. That's
of right. Which I made fun of him, because if you're on McAfee's show and people are paying attention to you, you haven't been canceled.
Mm-hmm.
That's the actual opposite of cancel culture. You're still being listened to. Nobody's canceled you. That's you're right. On a very large platform, right? Apparently, he got this from Portnoy. Portnoy gave him the shirt, and he said, in December, because it's going to have context for what he said about this, he was not happy when President Biden was in Kentucky taking a look at, remember all the tornadoes hit Kentucky? He was right. Touring the towns in Kentucky. And I guess it was caught on camera where he joked with a woman who was wearing a Packers jacket that she should tell Aaron Rodgers to get the vaccine. So this is what he said to all of that. I know. Here we go. When the president of the United States says this is a pandemic of the unvaccinated, it's because him and his constituents, which I don't know how there are any if you watch any of his attempts at public speaking, but I guess he got 81 million votes. But when you say stuff like that, and then you have the CDC, which how do you even trust them? But then they come out and talk about 75% of the COVID deaths have at least four of that, you know, the old, you know, the underlying issues.
Yeah,
and you still have this fake White House set saying that this is the pandemic of the unvaccinated. That's not helping the conversation. They put in an editor's note that says the CDC study found in a group of 1.2 million people who were fully vaccinated between December of 2020 and October 2021, 36 of them had a death associated with COVID-19. And that of those 36, 28, or about 78% of them, had 4 to 8 risk factors. 36 out of 1.2 million, 28 of the 36. Okay. So again, so then as he's, you know, thrown this up to, you know, all this stuff is now brought back up to Rodgers to explain why do you keep saying all this stuff? He said, this is what he said about it. when in the course of human history has the side that's doing the censoring and trying to shut people up, make them show papers, and marginalize a part of the community ever been the correct side? We're censoring dissenting opinions. What are we trying to do? Save people from being able to determine the validity on their own or to listen and to think about things and come to their own conclusion? Freedom of speech is dangerous now if it doesn't align with the mainstream narrative. That's, I think, first and foremost, what I wanted people to understand, and what people should understand is that censorship in this country is going on right now. Are they censoring terrorists or pedophiles, criminals who have Twitter profiles? No, they're censoring people, and they're shadow banning people who have dissenting opinions about vaccines. Why is that? Is that because Pfizer cleared $33 billion last year and Big Pharma has more lobbyists in Washington than senators and representatives combined? Why is the reason? Either way, if you want to be an open-minded person, you should hear both sides, which is why I listened to, and he named these couple of doctors that I guess have gone on shows and basically said, don't take the vaccine. And he said, I read stuff on the vaccine hesitancy side. I read stuff on the vaccines are the greatest thing in the world side. When you censor and make pariahs out of anybody who questions what you believe in or what the mainstream narrative is, that doesn't make any sense.
I want to go back to what he said. There's a lot to unpack there, but let me go back first to the, they're shadow banning people with the other viewpoints.
No, they're not.
Bro, in fact, I would argue that
you just did it, and it's on ESPN.com. Again, you don't know what cancel culture is.
Bro, I would argue they almost get more of a megaphone because it amplifies everything. Like, people quote retweet and call people idiots, but it spreads. It spreads faster and louder than the right, I don't want to even call it right or wrong side, but the fact-based side, essentially. I don't know what he's talking about on that one. Like,
you know, that's the thing. Like, nobody, my Twitter feed is littered with people with dissenting opinions about all of this. I don't agree with them, obviously, but like, to sit there and say they've been censored or banned, that's just flatly not true. Because they're there.
Right. Right.
If they're there, they haven't been censored.
Right. Right.
You know, I think when certain people go to lengths that are so beyond factually untrue, then it is the responsibility of a platform to step in and say, okay, you know, this is ridiculous. Like, at some point.
Yes.
And like, I don't know if there's anything wrong with that. It used to be a day where if somebody like Art Bell used to do this incredible show in the middle of the night, and it was about aliens coming to Earth and landing and taking people. And it was, you know, I don't know if you've ever heard it. It's fascinating to listen to it because the people who were on the show believe they were abducted by aliens.
That's
and
right.
Who's to say they weren't? I don't know. Maybe they were. But most of our fact-based universe is that didn't happen, hasn't happened. There's no documented proof of it. There are no spaceships that anyone has seen unless you believe the thing out in Roswell exists. Like, none of this is like, you know, all these things that came out, like the Navy saw these unidentified flying objects. Well, have you seen one land? No. You see the aliens? No. They fire at you? No. Did they use weird kinetic energy? No. Like, there's no verifiable proof of any of it. Doesn't mean it doesn't exist. It just means, as of right now, we have nothing to say it's true. And people used to say that show and others were crackpots.
Right. Right.
Like, you're making crap up. The people who show up in Dallas who think that John F. Kennedy's gonna come back, right, you know, at some point. What planet are you on? Like, he was shot to death 50 years ago.
That's right.
Why can't I say that's not happening? You know, like, because factually, it's impossible it to happen.
That's right. But
and the point is, like, are some people getting censored? Yeah, they probably are, because it's gone too far that it's so factually incorrect. It's so non-scientific, you know, that they feel it, especially with people who have a very large, you know, platform, that they have to do something. And for him to not understand that, you know, I think Aaron, you've decided in your mind that you know what the right answer is. You're entitled to the opinion, and Joe Rogan and Pat McAfee and even ESPN today allowed you the opportunity to espouse it, and you're not being canceled over it. So I think you're confused about censorship and deplatforming and cancel culture. You've said these things over and over. They even put in an editor's note, what he just said is verifiably untrue at this point, at least as far as we know, is untrue. And yet they still ran it. So your thoughts were publicly disseminated.
Right. Right.
What's confusing about this?
Exactly. Like,
I don't get it. The cancel culture thing is the most amazing thing I've ever heard. They're trying to cancel me. You're on TV saying they're canceling you. You're not being canceled.
That's right. That's right.
It's exactly. The opposite of it, actually. If you were canceled, you wouldn't be on TV right now.
Like, exactly.
That's crazy. That's crazy. All right, whatever. I'm still picking them to beat the Niners this weekend.
Of course. Guy can throw a football. It doesn't matter.
Oh, yeah. He's locked in on Sundays. I'm not worried about him on Sundays. All right, we'll take a quick break. Bray wants to show he's been 6:30 Sports Capital. All right, let's get into the Caps here for a minute. Lost late last night. Uh-huh. I didn't see it because it was on ESPN Plus, so I didn't get a chance. I was Twitter following it last night.
I'm going to say something publicly here that I had to throw on Twitter last night, and I'll pass along to you as well. If you have Hulu, you can watch the game. Everyone I've seen...
Do you have to have a certain level of subscription for that?
No, you just
because
have to have...
Because I found out there's a series called Yellow Jackets on Showtime that is supposedly amazing. And it's about like some women's soccer team that crashes in some, godforsaken place. And they go Lord of the Flies on each other.
Okay.
And I've heard it's amazing, but I don't have Showtime. And I heard on Hulu you can watch Showtime, but I didn't have the level package of Hulu to get the Showtime thing.
That one is like the premier level. I have the most basic version of Hulu. I still pay. Uh-huh. Like, it's not the free, because I think you can get a free version of Hulu. I have the most basic version that I have shared. That one, all you have to do is click on Hubs. The ESPN Plus tab is there, making people think, oh, I don't have that. No, click on the tab, and it'll let you select the Caps game. Yes. So, like, PSA... the Caps don't have any more of those games. That was the last one last night. But those moving forward, if you have Hulu, you can do it. And for whatever reason, they have just kept that quiet, probably to try to get you to sign up for ESPN Plus. It works. That's how I used it to watch the game in studio last night, was my Hulu login. So,
as you know, I like free things, especially in media.
Right.
I like free things.
Exactly. So it does indeed work.
For some reason, I pick hard lines with things.
Yes.
Like, I don't know. Like, you'd think I'd buy ESPN Plus because I just kind of have to. I won't.
No.
You'd think I'd buy The Athletic. Sorry, Ben. I don't. I make Callow send me articles every once in a while when it's something I need to read.
I write off my Athletic subscription. It's fine. I mean,
I know I should do it too. I don't know what it is. I got this hang up about it. I'm cheap. I have a hang up.
My quick 10-second spiel on The Athletic is I love long form baseball articles, and that site has Stark, Rosenthal, all the guys that I love to read. So that's why I pay for that one.
You know why I don't pay for The Athletic? Because there's very little that's going to be written about, and this is just because of my position, about the Washington football team that I don't already know.
That's fair. That's why I said it's baseball for me.
Now, so. I do find, like, at times, that there are times because I don't follow the, I love the NBA and I follow the Wizards, but I don't have the internal knowledge about them. Those are the times, like when Ben or Josh or whoever or David writes a piece about the Wizards, a good one, or like when Fred Katz was doing it, and I'm like, I think you need to send me that because I want to see what's going on because that's the one that really stands out to me. Tark does great with the Caps,
of course,
obviously. So those are the ones. So I think that's why I don't buy The Athletic.
Fair.
It's because, Ben does an incredible job, but they're not going to write anything that I don't know. Or I'm going to be surprised by, they're going to write a thing. But that's just because of my position with the team.
Right.
I mean, otherwise, that wouldn't be the case.
Fair.
Anyway.
Fair.
All right. So tell me what happened last night, because I didn't see any of it.
So, I mean, it was kind of pretty much how I predicted. All arrows pointed to the Bruins winning. This one was a physical game, though, before I get into how they lost. Brad Marchand was going at it with everybody. Tom Wilson, did you see the hit that he laid out on one of their players last night? Did you happen to see that one when that one blew up on Anton Bleed? Did you see that hit?
No, I didn't see that.
So Tom Wilson caught one of the Bruins forwards, Anton Bleed, looking down, and he blew him up, like, big time. Like, Bleed left the game, didn't return. Bruins did not, try to show him up, but Brad Marchand tried to get into it with just about everyone that moved. What happened there was Marchand got into it with Nick Jensen. Nick Jensen ended up being pretty physical with Marchand. Something happened where Marchand got hit in the shoulder and literally had an ice pack on the bench on his shoulder, tried to go out there, couldn't get the movement that he wanted. He left the game. That's big for the Bruins moving forward with Marchand. He's one of the best players in the league. He's just like Tom Wilson in that you hate him, But you take him on your team 10 times out of 10. If that guy put on your team's uniform, you'd love him. So that happened. Then Nick Jensen ended up getting hurt as well with an upper body injury, which is big-time loss for the Caps. Their blue line is already thin. No John Carlson last night. No Dmitry Orlov last night either. So they were already hurting, and they lost arguably one of their best defensemen yesterday against the Bruins. Then what happened in the third period was like it was quintessential Caps. They take a penalty. Nick Dowd takes a penalty in the final 2:30 left in the game. Bruins end up scoring the game-winning goal. He has to take the walk of shame, which is the second time I think he's done this in a week where he's taken a bad penalty and they've scored. And they just end up winning 4-3. All the arrows pointed to the Bruins winning. They did, but it's the same old problems for the Caps. The Caps had three power plays last night, Bram, where they didn't have a shot on goal.
Oh.
A shot on goal.
Oh.
When I tell you this, the power play has not only gone sideways, it has gone sideways into a ditch that now flows to a sewage plant. I don't know what,
like,
how else
like
to
in
this,
a way we haven't seen since pre-Ovechkin.
I think it was Shaper's Rink who posted they have the worst power play since like a 17-win Caps team in the 70s or something.
Yeah.
Like
okay.
It is we are literally in all-time bad territory here. I told you, I do not like to take guys' heads, but Blaine Forsythe, who runs the power play for the Caps, I'm sorry. Like, this is terrible. Like, you have the best goal scorer of all time on your team right now, and you can't figure something out? They got to get this fixed. I don't know what else you do besides making a move on the coaching staff. I don't like taking people's jobs away, but you have to at this point. Like, I don't know what else to tell you. You have all this talent, and they blew it last night. And if you had just one power play goal last night, we're talking about overtime or a win, depending on how the Bruins might have been playing or how the Caps locked things down. So this is brutal. Number two, it's just a broken record at this point. Vitek Vanacek played fine, and that's the problem. He's not swiping any games from anybody. Laviolette said something going into last night's game that I take issue with. He said, this is a good chance for Vitek Vanacek to take the starting goaltending reins. Bro, it's January. There's no reason to like give him that right now. And as I've said, Vitek Vanacek is a backup goalie. And last night it finally clicked for me. You know who Vitek Vanacek is, Bram? And I don't mean this disparagingly, but you know who he is? He's Taylor Heinicke. He's a backup. He has moments of greatness where you're like, huh, that was pretty good. But over a long sample size, we all know he's not the answer. So why Laviolette has to give this guy hope that he's going to be the starter down the stretch? He's not. You're not going to win a Stanley Cup with Vitek Vanacek. I'm sorry. It's either Samsonov gets his you-know-what together and he takes it. Or, well, I'm saying if.
I
trade for Marc-Andre Fleury.
I told you that a year ago.
Yes. Yeah.
Go trade for somebody now. But, I was saying this last week. Go trade for somebody now. What are you waiting for? And the other one, too, is, and I can't wait. They can't explain this. Why did they trade to get him back? What did they give up? Why did they give something up to give him back?
The more and more I talk to people, it's because it literally you can't sign a goalie cheap in the what he made. So they literally traded for someone they were familiar with because his salary was so low. And that's honestly, that's what's driven.
Walls are closing in on this team. Bad. I mean, like, really
well,
bad.
And like, honestly, look at all the trades of the past, you know, 2 to 3 seasons. It's all basically been financially based. And it, like, not in a way of like shedding money to shed money. It's to get under the cap because they are literally thousands of dollars under the cap, not millions of dollars, thousands of dollars under the cap. And so it's so tight. So I have pretty much heard it was financial for the VTech reasons.
I could spend hours talking about why it got here. And I was raising a red flag 3 years ago about this, going, you've got to get younger now. You've got to get younger now. Stop trying to prop the window open. And that's all they've done here. And I love Ted, man, but he is too loyal sometimes. He's a little too loyal sometimes.
I'll say this, though. The COVID protocols forced their hand. So guys like Alexi Protas are staying in the lineup. Axel Janssen-Fjällby got into the lineup last night. COVID stuff has forced their hand, and they seem to be skewing younger. I don't think it's too late, by the
they
way.
They had no choice.
Here's the
they
other
had no
thing,
choice
though.
But to go younger.
Here's the other problem. Guys like Nick Dowd and Garnet Hathaway, who were playing really well, you know, the past couple years, are now hitting a really bad spot. When those guys are bad and Pierre Laviolette relies on them, it's bad. The other thing that I'll try to skew this segment for at least a little bit more positive, Nick Backstrom got on the board last night. That Nick Backstrom, Tom Wilson, Alexi Protas line, who I just mentioned, looks awesome. Like, that line seems to be something that they have something moving forward. So fix the power play. You have two top six lines that seem to be working right now, and start playing the kids, which they have been doing. And you know, I can look at things
a
little
more. Trade for a
goaltender. Yes. No, seriously.
Rip the Band-Aid off. Go trade for a goaltender, for crying out loud. Enough already.
Seriously. And you know, Ben Raby and I talk all the time, obviously, when he's in studio with me and I'm producing the games. And all Ben ever asks for is a goalie to steal a game somewhere. And it's not asking much. It's what a goaltender needs to do every now and then. And neither one of them have done that. Neither one of them have shown the propensity to just do the bare minimum and be better than the guy across from them. Like last night, where the Bruins goaltender, it was Linus Ullmark. He made 14 stops. He let in three goals. So 14 off of 17 shots. He looked shaky, and he couldn't out-duel that guy. Come on. Like, it's got to be better. It's just got to be better than this. They're officially at the halfway point. Last night was game 41. There's 41 games to go. It's the same two problems. It is the power play, and it's the goaltending. Everything else I can live with going into the playoffs, but those two need to be fixed. So tomorrow they get Ottawa. Ottawa is what we always call an auto-win game. They should beat Ottawa, but you never know with this team these days, so who knows.
All right, let's stay in the land of Ted next, where Bradley Beal talked openly about why he has stayed here so far with Woj. We'll do that next. Bray, watch the show. ESPN 630 Sports Capital.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draftaccess to register for free entry today.